Okay, 7 o'clock, we'll call the meeting to order. And you have the proposed agenda in front of you. Any motion to approve? Moved by Councillor Black, seconded by Councillor Tower. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Tonight we have a presentation, but I'm going to defer the introduction to Deputy Mayor Aiken.
Thank you, Your Worship. Members of Council, public, it's a great pleasure to introduce Dr. Yvette Lloyd tonight. Yvette is a researcher at Mount Allison, I guess still a colleague of mine, has been doing a lot of work on ticks and Lyme disease. And I asked her if she wanted to come and sort of kind of give an update on what the state of the ticks and the disease was in this area, and she kindly agreed. So, Yvette?
Okay, thank you, Ron. Yes, we are still colleagues. And thank you, everyone, for taking time to look at pictures of disgusting things after dinner, because I realize no one could want anything more in life. So the top image with the line of ticks on it, those were all from one dog, and it was a dog living locally and picked off by the fine folks at the Tantramar Vet Hospital, who sent me an email saying, is this a problem? The answer is yes. And down below are ticks off of a dog, a human, and a cat. So, yeah, we have ticks in this area. Now, that's not super surprising. This is the latest Lyme disease risk map from the Public Health Office of New Brunswick. And green, yes, it's called green, not because it's all ecologically friendly, but it's green for Lyme disease, which has nothing to do with limes, but they call it green anyway. So we're in a high-risk area. And just to provide context, the problem with ticks is not that they're revolting bloodsuckers. We have lots of revolting bloodsuckers all over the place. But unlike mosquitoes, while ticks suck the blood, they squirt the diseases that they carry in their gut into your bloodstream, and you get sick, and that's generally a bad thing. Lyme disease is the most common of those tick-borne diseases. So that's what public health thinks. Basically, they indicate that essentially the southern half of the province is a high-risk area. And in case you don't know where we are, there we are, right in the green stuff. For the past 6 years, I've been collecting ticks. People from all over New Brunswick collect them from their pets, sometimes their children, sometimes themselves. Mail them into the university, we test them to see if they have Lyme disease, let them know, and then we put dots on a map. So this is only for 2016, and all those little dots are where ticks came from. And to zoom into Sackville, that is Sackville, and if that's not zoomed in enough because you can't see your house, that's more zoomed in. In case you're panicking that there's a purple dot on your house, these are all randomized by about 50 meters, so to preserve privacy, so your tick might end up appearing to be at your neighbor's house, but all's fair, your neighbor's tick may show up on your house.
Dr. Lloyd, could you stay close to the microphone? We actually taped this and put it online afterward. Thanks.
All right, so the dots here are randomized, so there are certainly lots of ticks being discovered in Sackville, and that's a map of the town with various ticks all over the place. Probably most problematic are the parks, our green spaces, the Waterfowl Park, Beech Hill Park, and the rough area of the golf course. For those of you who play golf, try to play it better. So people are finding ticks not only in their backyard, but there are a lot in the parks. How to deal with that? You can't actually spray for them or get rid of them. Your best bet is to tell people there are ticks, much the same way that people are warned when there are icy sidewalks or any other natural hazards. So there are a variety of signage options that are out there. There's the limited number of words, blunt and somewhat scary. The one on the right is a favorite in Nova Scotia. I guess they figured, you know, they wanted to go for dramatic. There is the, what I would consider the university approach, which is lots and lots and lots of words with varying degrees of information. I think this is very informative, very educational, and would not be read by anyone jogging through the park because it certainly takes a while to read. And then there's a sort of combination effect, which is fewer words and perhaps some useful information, such as there are ticks here and check yourself for ticks and don't go foraging in the trees, which is actually not a bad idea just for the sake of the vegetation anyway. That's really all I have to say. There are ticks here. It's not a bad idea to put signs up about them. And if that's sounding a bit daunting and unpleasant, be happy we don't have to put up that sign, which is from California, where they have to worry about plague, as in the Black Death plague, showing up in chipmunks. So they had to warn people not to feed the cute little chipmunks in case the chipmunks bit them, because some children died of the plague. So, hey, better than that.
That might be more effective, though. Right?
I suspect if you put up signs saying plague warning, people would pay attention. So that's all I have to say about ticks.
All right. That's very informative. Questions, folks? Fears?
Because there are many sprays out there that you can put on your animals or your pants and that are supposed to make the ticks not have any interest in you. Have you any idea how well they actually work?
Not very. The picture I showed right at the beginning with that long line of ticks off one dog, that dog was actually treated, unfortunately, with a herbal product, so I think you can draw your conclusions about the efficacy of that particular product. There are a variety of pills you can give your dog to protect them against both fleas and ticks, and they work quite well. The sprays don't work that well because anything toxic enough to kill the ticks is really bad for your pets.
Yeah, well, my understanding, it doesn't kill the ticks. It's just where the animal doesn't give off what the tick likes to smell, and so therefore they don't have any interest in jumping on that target.
Yeah, the problem, that will work with many species of ticks. It works for the really big ticks. We call them wood ticks. Unfortunately, those ticks don't actually have much in the way of disease that they can give you. The species of ticks that carries Lyme disease, that's the most aggressive of the ticks, it's effectively smell blind, so it doesn't care what you do or don't smell like. It's picking up heat. So unless you want to refrigerate yourself.
So, and I suppose that's the smallest of them all. Right?
Yes, of course it is.
Yes, yeah. Right, yeah. And because when they show them on TV, they usually show these large pictures.
Yeah, they show
ticks,
the big one. Cause,
but boy, they're not yeah. that size.
Yeah, know? They're about the size of a poppy seed. So think about seeing a poppy seed on you. And I've had lots of TV people come through the lab and I show them a real tick and, oh, we can't film that. Show us a big one. But that's not the problem.
Yep, right on. Okay.
Is there a time frame when, like, mosquitoes come in the spring or whatever,
yeah,
and then they sort of disappear? Do these just, are they here forever, like during the winter or?
No, it's sort of like the mosquito. You have a choice of bugs or snow. So once we have snow, it covers up the ticks. But the moment the snow melts, they come out, and they're here pretty much until they get covered up or until we have a really good hard freeze.
Yeah. So much for our warm weather.
Yeah. Oh, I'm out there enjoying it.
Councillor Mitten.
Thank you. I'm wondering two things. One, can you talk a little bit about how things are changing? my impression is that things are getting worse. There are more ticks and they're moving. Can you talk a little bit about that and why it's happening? And the other thing, I guess, I heard on the radio the other day an interview with someone from public health saying that they didn't think that it was useful to put up signs because it's everywhere, it's too widespread, so there wasn't any purpose. I guess maybe you can speak a little bit to that. I mean, obviously you're encouraging signs, but maybe you can talk a little bit about that. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a difference of opinion with public health on most points. So, yes, the situation with ticks is getting worse, and they're moving northward. Initially, ticks were a problem in Connecticut, and Lyme disease is actually named after Old Lyme, Connecticut, which is where the disease was first found. The ticks, when we used to have really brutal winters, the ticks, there'd be a few ticks around, but they'd be killed off in the winter. Now they're not killed off, so we've got our own homegrown ticks, as well we still get ticks brought up in the spring on migratory birds. So we're sort of getting a double dose of ticks, and they're spreading north. The mice and so forth that they feed from, those are spreading north. So we're getting more ticks. They really like it here, unfortunately. So they're busy being in New Brunswick. The issue with signs, yes, it's quite true. We have ticks everywhere in New Brunswick. But if you don't put up a sign, people are not going to know that you have ticks around. And it's not, there are ticks out here. I must stay inside and play with my Xbox 24 hours a day. People don't respond with fear to signs. Anyone who's seen the deep footprints through the waterfowl park when there are big signs saying winter conditions, icy, don't go here. Well, people, it's ignored. People are going to go out and enjoy our wild areas as they should. I mean, we only get this weather for a few days a year. But at the end of the day, if you check yourself for something with a whole bunch of legs that's sucking your blood, that's really useful. And you're not necessarily going to think about doing that unless you've noticed somewhere in the back of your mind that there was this little sign saying there are ticks here. And then you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Councillor Evans?
I've had the good fortune of hearing the tick lady on more than one occasion. And the first time...
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I was really disheartened to hear, and it was since confirmed immediately afterwards, that the public health or the physician who's in charge of public health, you know,
yes.
Was asked about ticks and should we send them in so they could be... diagnosed to see whether or not they do carry Lyme disease. And she at the time said, nah, we don't have it. We don't have that problem. And I said, well, how can you say we don't have that problem if you're not even looking? The fact that that information is now out there, are they slowly coming around to the fact that this is a risk?
I think the key word there would be slowly.
Yeah.
Yes, they are acknowledging that it's a risk. Their estimates of the number of people who have Lyme disease in New Brunswick are off by about 30 to 50-fold.
50-fold.
So if you think about that, that means, let's go with 30, because that's a nice, moderate Canadian number. So for every person they say has Lyme disease, there are 29 others who have it but haven't been diagnosed. So there's a lot more of it out there.
So, but at this point, there's no place to send ticks for testing other than yourself? Or?
If you have a tick, it varies depending on which health region you are in the province. Most health regions are still taking ticks off humans if you go to a hospital and have them take it off you or a clinic. A number of people don't feel like doing that sort of mandatory multi-hour incubation in a hospital. They'll just take the tick off them themselves. And then if you drop it off of at a veterinarian, it comes to me. There's no testing for ticks on dogs and cats other than what I'm doing at the university.
Are there any predators of ticks?
Guinea fowl. So, which is not a bad thing. I have no problem with the idea of flooding New Brunswick with guinea fowl.
And I'm quite sure the coyotes and foxes would be all in favor of that too. But no, they're an introduced invasive species. So like every other invasive species, the local animals are not really tuned into eating them. And they're not very big, so they're not enough to support any one animal.
Okay. Deputy Mayor?
Thank you. What's the latest proportion of ticks you're getting infected with Lyme disease, with bacteria?
Yeah, we're sort of at the 18 to 20% area range. It depends where you are in the province. The closer you are to the south, the higher it is. If you're up in Bathurst, it's a lower proportion.
What about this area?
25. And about, I think we had 18% of our dogs being infected.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now everyone should feel itchy. You're going to have a good scratch. Okay. Have I made everyone suitably uncomfortable?
There was some talk about appropriate clothing in the areas. If you're concerned about it, is there any guidance on that?
Yes. The approved clothing for going outdoors... this is the public health clothing. So you're supposed to be fully clothed, long sleeves, long pants, and you tuck your pants into your socks. So there are a couple issues with that. One is that it's hot, and it's putting your pants in your socks isn't really fashion forward, so try persuade a teenager that that's the look they want to go with. Obviously, if you're working in the forest industry, that's your gear. But that doesn't translate very well to recreational use of outdoor areas. And I think we have to recognize that people are going to go out and be comfortable outside, and that's a perfectly normal thing to do. And then if you think to just have a quick glance at your body when you have a shower, pull off a tick or notice anything crawling up your leg and remove it, that's probably going to be more effective than telling everyone to dress in full clothes for a day in the park.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Very informative.
All right. Enjoy. Shall I get rid of the plague warning?
You can send that on to us.
Okay, you're in charge of getting rid of the plague. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. So we are on to item number 2, Wild Wonder. Mr.
Yes.
Pride, are you up for that?
Thank you, Worship. Back in December 2016, the ladies from Wild Wonder, at the time preschool, came in and presented to council about their intention to open a forest school in Sackville. Since then, they've become incorporated, and they've expanded their services. So they're primarily offering children's outdoor recreational programming for kids ages 3 to 6, but they have done some adult work as well. And they have done some stuff with older kids, and they played a key role with our own Trailblazers program in helping us standardize the delivery of the program. We brought them on not last school year, but the school year before that to help us out. On top of that, 3 years ago, council in one of our annual planning meetings made Beech Hill Park a priority and asked us to start doing more up there to get more people using the park. So since then, we've done several events there. We have the Beech Hill Park Challenge, Paintpocalypse. We offer our weekly or our summer Trailblazers camps. And we've installed disc golf that attracts about 140 people a week up there. And on top of that, the last couple summers, we've been working with Wild Wonder, and they've been offering their summer program during the week at Beech Hill Park up around the ski hut area. So that partnership with them has worked out really well. It's given us a consistent presence in the park, which is nice. They've coexisted really well, actually worked with our Trailblazers camps last summer, and we plan on doing the same with them this summer. The disc golfers, they've worked well with them. And any other park patrons, I haven't heard any complaints whatsoever about them being up there. As they've progressed and moved along, they're looking for a permanent home. So they were interested in Beechill Park as a permanent home and signing an agreement that would allow them to be up there for the next 5 years. So the key points of the agreement, it's included in your package here, but I'll just go through some of the key points. It would be a non-transferable usage agreement, first 5 years, beginning this August, and there would be a 60-day termination notice clause for either side if it wasn't working out. They also were successful in getting a grant that allowed them to purchase a 20-foot yurt with a wood stove, and as well as a solar-powered compostable toilet. So these are semi-permanent structures that they'd be interested in installing at Beechill Park up around the sledding area, and I'll show you a site plan in a minute. In lieu of rent, they've offered to give us access to the yurt about six times a year, and they've also offered to facilitate some sessions for us, up to 12 free programs that would fall under the guise of being a town program. So things like orienteering, survival skills, stuff like that, up there at Beech Hill. And currently we spend about $2,400 a year on similar programs, so those would be free. Of course, in the agreement, Beech Hill Park is still public space, so patrons of the park can still use it. There's only limitations around the use of the yurt, but we can't tell the public to not access a public park. And either can they. Also, if there's a clause in there that if for whatever reason there was a town event, say the RCMP musical ride came back and we needed access to that space, we would be able to do that. We just have to make sure that we provide Wild Wonder with 30 days notice. The likelihood of that happening during a weekday is pretty slim, but you never know. Of course, any damage to the Wild Wonder property would be their own responsibility. The town would be named as co-insured on their $2 million liability insurance, which they have, and Wild Wonder would be required to adhere to any federal, provincial, municipal bylaws or legislation. Mike, if you could pop up the site plan there, please. That'd be... So this is the area of Beech Hill where they have been operating the last two summers. You can see down in the bottom left-hand corner there the ski hut. So this is the sledding area that we use during Winterfest and the big main field. And then this is kind of the island of trees between the field and the main trail that goes down around into the bottom of the field. So right now they have a little base camp that they've set up there. There's really minimal equipment there. They have a couple logs that they use to sit down on and things like that. And but they are interested in putting the yurt in this island of woods. And there's really minimal... The trees that are in there are fairly shrubby, so it wouldn't affect any large vegetation or very little. And we've been working... Todd and I have been working with Wild Wonder and have gone in and seen the site and everything else, and we think it would work out. It's fairly level in there, so we think it would work out pretty nicely. And also their entire mandate is about giving kids access to the environment and, I guess, growing young environmentalists. So they're not into cutting green. They don't want to cut live vegetation. So anything that they do in the area would be very would be environmentally responsible. Thanks, Mike. So, next Monday, what we're hoping to do is ask council to authorize the mayor and clerk to enter a usage agreement with Wild Wonder, similar to the one that's attached to your packages. It hasn't been reviewed by legal counsel yet, so staff would then take that draft agreement and review it with our legal team and have something finalized to be presented. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Councillor Finney.
Matt, what do they charge per child?
There must be a fee to charge. I think they're, they said that they do charge quite a high rate.
Yeah, they do charge a higher rate than a standard, than the play school, for example. I'd have to double check to see exactly what it is, but it is higher than a standard play school or daycare rate.
Are they having some extra spaces for some people who can't afford that rate?
Yeah.
And what would the percentage of that be?
they are able to accommodate 12 children, and I know that this summer, they gave two of those spaces to lower-income children.
Why do they want
5 years? Would they consider doing it for 1 year so we could see exactly whether it's actually a good thing or not?
The biggest reason is because the yurt itself is a large, heavy structure, so it's a lot of work to get it up and down, but... So we do have the 60-day notice clause in there. So if we found out it wasn't working for us or it wasn't working for them, then they do have that option to get out of it if they need to.
Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Worship. This yurt, it's just one of these things with the cloth walls, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's
like a thick canvas.
Yeah, at first blush, from just the liability side, the combination of a cloth-walled structure, a wood stove, and a bunch of small children doesn't seem to be the best.
The yurt is designed to have a wood stove, so I couldn't pretend to get into the specifics of understanding how it's built, but it is built to house a wood stove, so it's meant to have one. The national parks do have yurts as well, and they do have wood stoves in them.
Other questions? Councillor Evans?
You said questions, and I don't have a question. I have a comment. I just want to extend kudos to you for doing that. This is an exciting partnership. I think this is a great initiative. I think it benefits us. It doesn't cost us anything. And if nothing else, having more people in the park make the park, it's better for us. It's protection. I've noticed that kind of stuff in other cases. But this is... It's sad that this is the case, but there are lots of kids who grow up and don't play outdoors. And so when they were here and made their presentation to us, I thought this is a wonderful idea. I'm glad we're going to be partnering with them. So thanks for doing this.
Other? Okay, just a couple of comments. It seems like we've seen this come from an idea to a kind of a startup, and now they really want to find out if it's a viable opportunity or not. So I think, in my view, that's the kind of where we're being asked to look at, with the caveats around it about 60-day notice. And it is a use agreement. It's not any type of a land transfer in any way. It is a use agreement of a specified area. And they may be able to do some tick work as well in that area. Let us know. So if any other questions, this will be coming forward to go to, if you approve it, to legal for final look. Councillor Mitten.
Thank you. I guess I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about, there's the yurt and then there's a composting toilet, and it's talking about solar energy collection system. Do you mind speaking a little bit about what that is about? Is the solar energy just part of the toilet? And because if so, I guess you don't have to go into too much detail.
Again, I can't pretend to know exactly how it works, but yes, the solar energy is there, and it's used somehow to it would have the fan, and I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Pride. Bring that forward next week. Annual question about Municipalities of New Brunswick, UMNB.
Your Worship, members of council, as each of you are aware, the UMNB holds an annual conference in late September, early October each year. This year's conference will be held in Fredericton on September 28th, 29th, and 30th. Registration forms have been circulated to Mayor and Council via email and a hard copy in each of your mail slots. And as with the town's policy, a motion must be passed at a regular council meeting, noting the attendees to UMMB. The deadline is for registration forms is in August, although we would like to, if possible, have an idea of who is looking to attend this year and have a motion prepared possibly as soon as next week. We have heard from some counselors so far, and I thank you for that. So if there is interest by any other counselors to attend, we can certainly add your name to the list in the preparation of crafting a motion as per policy.
So is it worth canvassing right now? We did hear.
Sure. I have already heard from your worship, Councillor O'Neill, Councillor Black, and Councillor Butcher. I've also heard from Deputy Mayor Aiken.
So. Councillor Evans?
I have my form at home.
Okay.
I intended to bring it, but I'm incompetent.
Councillor Tower, you're telling her tomorrow, or are you telling her now?
I'll tell her. I can do it now, yes. She's taking names.
Okay. Yes, thank you, Bruce.
Did you say?
At this point, I'm unable to commit to whether to go. So I guess I can say that I can decide that I won't be able to go, unfortunately, and I'll get a report back from the rest of council, because at this point, I would have to RSVP too far in advance. So I'll count on the rest of council to let me know how it goes and represent Sackville well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, Mike. Keeping on the subject of UMMB, the other area for council to consider at this time is resolutions that they may want to consider to be brought forward at the UMMB conference. As you are aware, and I'm sure all remember, in 2017, the town of Sackville submitted three resolutions to the UMMB annual conference. The first was an NB power rating, asking the municipality, the UMNB to attend the rate hearing. The second was UMB's approach to the province to consider other options other than a property assessment freeze. And UMNB approached the province to engage local government on the policy implications of the McKinney report. All three of those motions were passed at the UMNB conference. reporting on the resolutions would have occurred through the zone meetings throughout the province, and potentially the media and the status of what happened to those would also have been reported, I believe, at the zone meetings and through the media. So looking forward to the 2018 conference, some potential possible resolutions. Mayor Higham has drafted a resolution out of the last Zone 2 meeting, which I believe several councillors attended. This, I think Michael has it up there. Do you have it up there? I think it's on the very last page. It's to do with inadequate infrastructure to manage the railways that are going through jurisdictions that, you know, certainly can cause flooding issues on CN properties as well as private property. So that is a potential UMMB resolution that possibly Mayor Higham could speak a little further to since he crafted. And also I will pass it over to Michael, who will speak on two other potential areas that have been mentioned through council.
Thank you, Donna. So one item that council has previously briefed on and provided information on is regarding the lack of funding provided for fire services. On items that do not adequately reflect the true cost of the items. For example, new buildings. The province, through the local service districts, only fund $800,000 for construction of a new facility for a fire hall when the reality of the cost of a new fire hall is in the millions. New fleet is another example whereby the province will fund, as an example, $350,000 for a new fire truck. And as we recently have seen, the new fire truck cost in the range of $500,000. So things are going up, but it doesn't seem that the funding mechanisms are going up at the same proportion. As well, there was discussion around currently no funding for highway calls. With regards to that, even though a significant portion of annual calls are relative to highways that really have nothing to do with municipalities and are completely a provincial responsibility. So we looked at if council was interested, we could draft a potential resolution would be to call on the UMNB to meet with the province to provide appropriate funding mechanisms whereby fees for fire service outside the municipal town boundaries is more fairly cost shared. The other one that was provided that council had been provided information on is with regards to the service cost for services outside of our municipality. So council has also provided information on how to obtain funding from local service districts. And in Sackville's case, we have 13 local service districts within our region. So in order to generate funding from 13 local service districts, we would need to do 13 presentations and 13 requests for funding and 13 votes of each of the local service districts. So other municipalities, of course, could face the same challenge. So we looked at possibility and continuation with a past resolution relating to regionalization. Last year we had presented one on the McKenzie report. So we would look at expanding that and with a potential resolution to call on the UMNB to initiate discussion with the provinces in order for the LSDs to contribute annually to all municipal recreational services provided by the municipality that are provided to the local service areas. So that there should be a funding mechanism, whether it be for the rink, whether it be for the ball field, whether it be for the programs that the municipality puts on. As previously indicated, comments were, well, charge people outside your town more than you charge. There's issues with doing those things. But if a municipality had, say, $500,000 recreation facilities and programming budget, and the local service districts had even assessment similar to fire service of 10% of that, that would mean could mean $50,000 in funding towards those services from the local service districts. So those were two motions, two information packages we thought to throw back at council if they had interest in us crafting motions to submit to the UMNB that we could do so.
Thank you. The process is that it has to be a resolution of council.
Yes.
Right. It doesn't have to be several councils, which is what I was trying to do with the railway and flooding one.
No, it just has to be a resolution that's been passed by our municipality for our municipality to present to UMNB.
Okay.
The deadline for that is August 10th, which falls prior to our August regular council meeting. So in the event that council was looking to forward some resolutions to UMNB, it would need to either come forward at our July 9th regular council meeting or our August 7th special meeting of council in order to make the deadline.
Okay. I'll just speak about the railway one, which was that went back to when we hosted the Zone 2 meeting in this room the previous year, where there were a lot of shared concerns with the communities that had a railway going through it, that they couldn't get the culverts clean, they couldn't get the culverts replaced, they couldn't get them upsized, couldn't even get somebody down to look at things. And so that we passed a resolution that got lost in the bureaucracy because it was deemed to be a national question, so they sent it to FCM. At the time Raymond took very ill, it got lost in that process. So the suggestion was, when we were at FCM, was, well, let's do that again with a similar motion with other communities involved. So I did redraft it, and I sent it to Dorchester and Salisbury, both of whom have the same concerns about flooding around the railway tracks, and got a reply back from UMNB, which I then replied back to that reply of why we were trying this particular avenue. And I have not heard anything from any of the parties now, and that's 3-4 weeks ago since that happened. So probably 2.5 weeks ago that's happened. So I'm a little concerned that this is going to fall again. So if we have the capacity to do it ourselves, I'd certainly suggest we should try that. The wording right now is, we ask UMNB to explain the context of this issue, because there seems to be some concerns over who owns what and who has authority over what and what kind of impact, what's the legal situation if they're impacting lands around them. We understand if we impact there, we get that, but we don't understand how they're getting away with impacting people, lands around them. So we can look at that more, but it has that long history, and we'll see if you're willing to do that. We'll be pleased to take that one forward. So other questions? You obviously have heard these other ones multiple times. We were thinking of raising them individually. We have raised them politically in some areas. Highway response costs, adequate recovery of the fire services in nearby districts, which is on a asset formula that always leaves us, what would you say, estimate under how much a gap in a service at the end of the year?
For difference cost, in, cost of difference in what we feel we should be getting versus what we are getting, easily in the 50,000 range.
And the last one is the regional recreation services, which is also something we've talked about. I can talk about that a little bit more, but Councillor Evans.
Yeah, I just I think it's great, and I support this idea. I have a question on the funding one. When you talked about lobbying the LSDs, part of the problem and part of the solution addressed in the McKendy report is LSDs don't have representation. And so there's nobody in LSD to vote. Essentially, it would be the province in each case. And so what we're doing is we would be appealing, and I support doing this, appealing to the province that they should be more reasonable in the funding, which they would end up having to pay us more, right? I mean, that's our challenge. But I don't think we would be negotiating with LSDs. They are unincorporated areas, and they don't have the ability to tax, and they don't have the ability to make decisions. So,
and when I raised the topic when we had the assessment issues, and I spoke to the acting ADM at that point, their response was, well, you have to go to each of the LSD reps. So individually.
Oh, I mean, the reps were appointed by the province.
You have to go talk to my staff member who's appointed by the province, and they will then take it to each board as you wish, and each board will vote on whether they want to give you more money for a service they're already getting a deal on. So that's not going to work.
No.
Yeah, just to expand on that, basically Daniel Gauguin is our LSD rep. He works for the province, so we would then have to go to Daniel, say we were building a new facility. We want the local service districts to contribute 4 cents on their tax rate towards the facility. He would then call meetings of each of those 13 areas, and you have to have 50% vote in favor of that. All the people in the LSD. So some LSDs could have 20 people in them, or 20 houses, right? Some could have 200. But each one would individually vote yes or no, do we want to contribute 4 cents to the operation of this new facility? And you would you as a municipality have to go and make a presentation to them at that meeting and say, this is why, here's the reasons. So therefore, it's very difficult. Some may say yes, some may say no. You definitely cannot get funding. If we went and asked for example, the rink operation, if you've already built it, you're already paying for it, why would we contribute now? Of course, the answer would be no. So what we looked at through our previous presentation to council and now would be that, similar to cost-sharing model for the fire service to the local service districts, why shouldn't there be a cost-sharing model for recreation facilities and programs for the local service districts to pay? It would be an increase in taxes, but it would be the province initiating legislative changes to say local service districts will be funding recreational programming in municipalities in this way.
Okay. CAO, please.
If I can just add to that, too, council's already discussed this topic a while ago. Staff has basically packaged the same comments and your comments back a few months ago, and we really identified, as council at the time said, the practicality of going out and talking to 13 municipalities or communities, LSDs, isn't going to be reasonable. We think, and this is council was saying, the best approach is the province really just implement and agree to do it. So the question here tonight is really, if you are favorable towards that, do you wish to put forward that type of motion to UMNB asking the province to implement something like that?
Thanks for that clarification.
Good job. My answer is yes. Councillor Finney.
I was going to say, Your Worship, I think there's only one municipality that I'm aware of, and that was about 10 to 12 years ago that they got an agreement with their LSDs, and that was Quispamsis up that way. And they did it on the basis of the fact that the arena and the other services that are provided, and the people on the outside decided, yes, they feel it's only fair that they should pay their fair share. So how they did it, I don't know, but maybe someone should talk to them and see exactly how it began, and if it's still in place. I haven't heard for a while, but I haven't talked to the people from down that way.
And the other place that we have heard was Sussex when their tax base went down and they couldn't maintain that pool.
Yeah.
And somehow the province was able to step in and adjust how the LSDs were going to pay for that. So we don't know that it was a legislative change or what it was, but somehow that relationship changed and they were able to keep the pool open.
Maybe we need to talk to those two municipalities to find out how they did it or what happened.
So it's as you saw last time, all of our resolutions were passed and there was some action on them. We might not get them all passed this time, but we may also get some action on one or two that have been irritants for a long time. So I guess staff is looking for general direction tonight. That there's four topics there, it seems to be.
Three.
Did I miss highway calls? Is that separate?
Sorry, that would be the combination, the fire services, cost sharing. So highway calls are mixed in with that they pay the correct proportion. So it would be one resolution.
Okay.
Fire services.
Okay. So three then. The railways and flooding, the services to highway and other areas and regional recreation. Okay. So anybody have any questions or issues? You'll wait to see what the wording looks like. Maybe mine can be simplified a bit. Okay. So we'll try to get that. I'm not sure we will have it for this month, but we may have to have a discussion next week to pass.
We will certainly work towards having
motions
ready for council to
consider in July 9th. Okay. Great. Thank you. Okay, Public Works. We'll move on to Public Works. Mr. Acton.
Thank you, Your Worship. Members of Council, basically I'm going to kind of run down through, just try to give you a brief description on a lot of the capital budget items and kind of work through them. There's a few that will have resolutions tied to it, and I'll speak to that as I go through. So I'll start with the Main Street reconstruction project. As Council is aware, we did get designated highway funding, so Council was in favor of proceeding with the Main Street project. at which case we put a tender out to that it, out on June 1st, or sorry, the sorry, the June. Just got to see when. June 15th, I think it was. We put the tender out on June 15th for the Main Street reconstruction project, and it closes on July the 5th, so Thursday of this week. The project consists of total reconstruction, so replacement of the water, the sewer, the storm system, curb, gutter, and sidewalk, so total reconstruction, a typical reconstruction project it'll consist of. We are changing, as council, we had discussions with council that we're changing the routing of the storm sewer because the storm sewer currently goes behind private, on private property and behind houses. It's going to be rerouted on Main Street and then down Dufferin Street and tying into a system already further down Dufferin. So that's the storm sewer realignment. Other than that, we're going from basically Dufferin Street to Queens Road intersection, and we're going to redo Queens Road intersection so that we are out of the intersection when we do further future phases down Queens Road. So to date, we've had five plan takers who have picked up plans for that project. Council approved capital budgets both under the utility and the general capital, and of course we have funding under the designated highway funding as well to fund this project. And there will be a motion coming forward on Monday night pending the tender opening on Thursday, and council will receive the results of the tender on, likely on Friday, so you'll have that for the weekend to review, and you'll see a motion coming forward Monday of next week. Second one, the Lauren Street Stormwater Mitigation Project Phase 2. Since I wrote this, I did send an email to all mayor and council with the tender results. The tender went out on June 1st. We had a site visit on the 14th. There were 12 plan takers who picked up plans for this project, so there was a lot of interest. The tender closed on June 28th. That was last Thursday past. And from the information that council received and my email, you'll see that we had an approximate budget of $3 million, and the lowest bid was approximately $6 million. The consultant, obviously, we're substantially over budget. It's back into the hands of the consultant, and they're evaluating the options, and they'll come back to council in the near future. As part of that, there were some things that I needed to talk to council about. As council is aware, the EIA, determination from the minister, happened. We got the final determination. And as part of that determination on this overall project, there were things that we need to do as part of that determination. And there's additional costs that were associated with those, such as the field survey for the birds, the wetland function, and the flora and fauna. That was a requirement that the town had to undertake as part of the EIA, and we need to follow that through, and there's a cost of approximately $7,850 associated with that, which was not originally budgeted for and council did not approve. There was another one, the ERD, the Crown land, in order to build the Abado on provincial property. We had to have surveying done, we had to apply for all of that. There's a cost associated of $5,350, again, which was an item as part of the EIA that we have to do, and wasn't something that was originally budgeted for. So these are motions that would be coming forward next Monday night. And there is another one, which was the presentation of new renderings and a biologist workshop that the EIA and the Department of Environment required us to do. And there was a cost associated with bringing consultants in outside of Crandall, of course, to do that, and additional renderings as part of that workshop of $7,675 to do that. So these are costs that were up and above the original approved engineering for this project, as solely as a result of the EIA. And I would be looking to try to bring a motion forward because these are requirements that we have to get completed as ASAP despite the issues with the phase two tender. Anything?
Yes.
The funding for these items comes out of the complete the budget for the project. So it's we're not looking for additional funds. They will come out of the clean water and wastewater funding budget. And, of course, the town's capital budget that was part of that overall Phase 2 project.
75% funded.
And it is 75% funded, obviously, from between federal 50, provincial 25, and municipal 25. Okay. Questions on that?
The elephant in the room is finding out that something we thought our consultant said would be $3 million is $6 million. This is huge. Often things are over budget and we have to regroup. Gobsmacked would be an accurate description of my response. And so I don't want to put you on the spot, but this is huge, and I need a little more to wrap my mind around it, because if – when we were doing the storage facility up at the rink, we said, okay, it came in over budget, or the bids were all high, so we decided, okay, we'll just do this. What do you do in a case where, I mean, if it was $50,000 and it was $100,000, that would be twice as much, but this is $3 million and $6 million, so help me here.
Very good point. Again, it's back into the hands of the consultant. They'll look at things such as, can we remove certain sections that don't compromise? And in other words, a phasing approach. They're going to look at various options of that. Is there a second way of another option of doing that, getting the same end result? They'll look at that. Maybe a pumping station versus something open ditch. Consultants looking at all those and report back. It's a huge unknown when you start digging in marsh, and dealing with marsh mud and the time of the year and working on frozen ground or not frozen ground, and some people say, well, can you guarantee that it's going to be frozen or not frozen? So it was a very difficult project to gauge in that sense. And
Councilor Black.
Not to be too mean, but I would question the ability of the consultants to predict this. I mean, it seems huge that they wouldn't have some concept of what was under the ground and what they needed to dig into to get this tender going. Anyway, so if it goes back to the consultants, is that a fee that we're going to have to pay for them to look at this, or is this still within the money that we're paying to the consultants for their consulting work before? Like, is this a new bill that we're going to be getting from the consultants to redo what they've already done?
The brief discussions we've had on that is that they're taking it back and they're re-looking at it right now. So,
CAO?
So are they taking responsibility for it? That is my understanding.
Okay.
I don't think anybody was pleased, excited, happy about the results of last Thursday, but it was only last Thursday. To be fair, it's a complex project, and it's been complex from day one. It's been delayed for some time now, so we need to allow the consultants the time to work with staff to see what options can exist, and as soon as we have a better idea, we'll bring something back and hopefully have some answers at that time. To try and answer questions here tonight is really just speculating unfairly to ourselves, to you, and to the consultants, really.
One more?
Sure.
I know that you can't answer too many questions, as Phil said, but I would hope that the consultants would come back with many options. Is it possible that this phase two just doesn't happen? Is phase one enough? Anyway, it would be nice to see many options, potentially, just to give some sense of where we're at, where we're going to go.
So,
Your Worship, there'll be as many options as is reasonable and feasible to bring back for council. And at the end of the day, council will be the ones to determine whether or not something goes ahead or doesn't go ahead and at what cost.
All right. So we're looking forward to seeing how that unfolds. You have other updates?
I just wanted to quickly run down through some of the other ones, and council's already familiar with some of them because you've approved some resolutions to purchase certain equipment, but I just wanted to update you on them. The storage facility, EMO building in behind the Civic Center is now complete. And the only thing the contractor is, we're going to see him fire up the boiler, even though we don't need it this time of year. But in preparation for the winter months, we'll make sure that functions. That's all that's left. Facilities capital upgrades, that's for the various buildings, and that's ongoing. The replacement of the ball field building, we're very close to having the tender ready to go to be issued. So we hope to issue the tender in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned for approval on the tender of that one. The fleet replacement, the two vehicles for Public Works and one for Parks, council already approved, and we did receive those vehicles, and you may have seen some white vehicles driving around town with town decals on them, and those are our new vehicles. The GPS equipment, council again approved that purchase, and that is working out very well, and our engineering student, Tim Soper, is doing very well and has picking up a lot of the utilities throughout the town and working with us on various projects with that piece of equipment, and it's working out very well. King Street culvert replacement, we're just in our final stages, hopefully, of approval with the Wawa and DFO are now involved because it's a waterway and there's fish there, and it's been a very, very complex project, I must say. It's one that got deferred from last year. It's been probably a two-year venture, and it's been unbelievable just to replace two pipes that cross one of our streets, but it has been very complex. But we are close, and again, DFO, Department of Environment, everyone's involved, and it looks like we'll get approval and be able to do that project, plan for it this summer. Crosswalk flashing lights, you may have seen on our RA5 new addition, the additional blinking lights on the RA5 at King Street, Civic Center, and by the post office, and I think that's a good addition. A lot of communities have done them, and we were able to get them installed, and gives a lot more light flashing when people need to cross, so more awareness. The retaining wall up at the kind of the intersection or next to Wright Street. Just wanted to kind of take this opportunity to update council. It's taken a little bit of a turn there. We were originally, council approved the expenditure of putting in a new retaining wall because the existing one is crumbling, to say the least. I know we had some requests from councillors, I believe the mayor, residents in Sackville, a lot of them have said, you know, we really need to have a sidewalk on that side of the street. So as part of this project and the retaining wall, we actually looked at, you know, is this feasible for us to, you know, put a retaining wall there, get a sidewalk? And so we started looking at it and evaluating it, and we said, well, yeah, maybe it is possible that we could, one, get a sidewalk, and two, maybe we don't need a retaining wall if we had the ability to slope the land back. So we had discussions with two private, the two owners of the property. We own a lot of land there, but by the time you cut the top of the slope off, obviously you have to impede on somebody's property there slightly in order to do that. So we've had some discussions, and the property owners are in agreement. They want to see some kind of detailed plans on what it's going to look like. So it is conceivable, and we're looking at putting a sidewalk there down to a faucet, which would connect up to the existing one on the other side of faucet, not having a retaining wall, which would save us money in the future because we wouldn't have a wall that we would have to maintain in 5 or 10 or 20 years. There was a few other complications, like a water main that's literally, and that was the reason we couldn't just move everything back 5 feet and put the wall, because there, we have a, literally have a water main that's in our way. So we would lower that water main, make enough property to put a sidewalk, and then just kind of gradually slope the banks back down to faucet, and that's what we're looking at trying to do. We'll need some of the allocated funds for that project to lower the water main and put the new sidewalk. But other than that, we're looking at trying to do that project in-house. And unfortunately, there are 3 large maples on one property that would have to go. We looked at that, and the 3 maples are deteriorated. They have limbs that are dead on them. So we would look to replant some trees there at the end of that project to replace the ones that we would take down. So that's kind of where we're at with that retaining wall project, which takes a bit of a turn, but I think it's from an engineering standpoint, it does a couple things. It gives us a sidewalk, and if anybody's ever come out of Wright Street and looked down the hill, it's not so easy, right, because of the wall there. So it really, really improves our sight line and our visibility, being able to look down the street by able to do this project as well. So for those 2 reasons alone, we feel that that we want to try to make this happen.
Excellent.
While doing that, are you going to be able to possibly put marking for a 3rd lane?
We actually looked at that. You might notice a few dots and stuff there now. It is a bit tight, but we are trying to experiment with a 3rd lane there now. But we would have the ability, and we could look at that to potentially widen that out a little bit there. We've got a sign that we have to deal with, so it's something that we have looked at, can look at, and we are experimenting, and we just have a white line left to put there and a couple of arrows, so we're experimenting with that. You'll see we have a yellow line that's kind of offset a little bit now, and we were going to place a couple of turning arrows there to kind of help direct the traffic a little bit better. So, yeah.
Right on. Yeah. And I take it that the sensors have been put into the streetlights now because they're turning.
They have been, and they're functioning the way they were, and there was a few tweaks we had to make because just a car coming out of Mallard and cutting across one of the loops on Main Street was triggering it and thinking there was a car in the turning lane when there wasn't. So I worked with the roadway who did the work. They put a few delays in, and from what I've observed, it's working the way that we wanted it to. If there's somebody in the turning lane, you'll get the turn signals. If there's no one sitting in the turning lanes, you'll get this straight through. So,
right on.
Yeah.
I think it's working great.
Yeah. If there's no other questions on that retaining wall, I'll just proceed to the events infrastructure. That's the events, the tent, and through Matt Pride and the engineering department, we put a tender out. Council approved the tender, and that's one pretty much complete. We're just waiting for the new tent to arrive. And the highway signage. If you've noticed traveling towards Nova Scotia and back from Moncton, you'll notice that the highway signs, the new image is up. And one light is installed at one or reinstalled on one, and we're just waiting for the contractor. It should be any day now for the light to be installed at the new one on the Walker Road exit. And there's a few other minor things with the tag on the bottom that we're working with, but the image itself is up and looks great.
It does. On that front, what's happening with the, or maybe Mr. Burke, what's happening with the DTI sign on the other side? Do we know where that's sitting?
I do. I had a request from a resident who was wondering where it was, so we put the PO back in, I think it was April, or maybe April or May. So we've been waiting for a while. But I just got confirmation this morning actually it started on Friday, saying, well, it was going to be within the next week to 2 weeks. Then I got an email back saying, well, could you be a little more, you know, can you give me an idea or let me know what's going to happen? Because I said we'd like to follow up with some of our residents who have been inquiring. And I got an email back today saying it was being done today. So I don't know if anybody noticed.
I saw some people
outside the highway. Yeah, so it looks like it was supposed. I was told that it was being done today, but I was not able to confirm.
You saw it?
Confirm that.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yes.
Excellent. And appreciative of the right that a sidewalk on the corner there of Main Street and Wright, because as I've said several times, that's the area that really bothers me the most, and we know foot traffic is going to increase this fall with some more attraction in that area. So we suspect that that would be a really good development to have.
We've been out and done the engineering. The shots, we're just evaluating the topography there to shift 5 feet off the curb and then what we need for slope. So it looks doable with a bit of earthwork there.
Yeah. Excellent.
Thank you, Your Worship.
Councillor Black.
I just had a quick comment. After receiving the $6 million tender slap in the face, it's nice to see a list of projects like this to kind of bring us up to speed on what Public Works is doing for the town. So thank you very much. It's great work.
Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Worship. I'd just like to thank you for the signage and line painting at Church Street and Pond Shore. That makes that intersection less, I don't know what the word is, vague. Now, we went from a yield sign to a stop sign and painted lines on the road so people actually know where to be. So it was, thanks very much.
We wrestled with that, but it was something that I felt strongly about, and we wrestled with what to do there. It's a very unique intersection. It's extremely wide, and I've seen people come out of Church Street and somebody come down Pond Shore and cut behind them. So that really cleaned it. We felt it would clean it up, and hopefully it will be good.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Acton. Move on to Cultural Coast. Mr. Kelly Sparrow.
Thank you, Your Worship, members of council. I'll just give a brief background and an explanation as to what the potential motion might be for next week. We've been a member of the Cultural Coast since 2010, and I think, as everybody knows, it represents 13 municipalities around the region. It resulted in 2015, the Southeast Tourism Association, Kent Tourism Associations, all amalgamated with the Cultural Coast. So it's quite a geographical area. And they do a variety of activities, including familiarization tours with frontline workers, attending trade shows, assisting with product development, and regional guides. And this year, in addition to the regular activities, they're focused on developing a survey of training, partnership, and product development needs for the region, and continuing to work on their rebranding as Destination Southeast, as well as implementing a new culinary tourism plan, which they have a small committee working on, and I'm currently a member of that committee, as well as the board of the Cultural Coast. With all of the uncertainty of the regional destination marketing organization plan, when we were budgeting last year, we budgeted the full request for the RDMO as our total amount for regional tourism associations. So it was in the area of, I believe, about $8,000. As you all would know as well, the RDMO only requested or required half of the full amount. So that does leave us with a potential balance, I guess, of about $3,700 that we could put towards a regional tourism organization. It does, however, if we're going to pay for membership for the Cultural Coast for this year, we would have a budget shortfall of about $800 that was not budgeted for. However, because the RDMO is still very much in the development phase, my understanding, and Deputy Mayor Aiken or Mayor Heim may have more to add to this, is that It's still very much in the development and discussion phase. As well, we've learned recently that Moncton is looking at possibly turning their destination market organization into more of a regional organization as well. So there may be some merger or partnership between these two ideas, and we expect to know that by the end of summer. However this means, I think it's very unlikely that we'll have any sort of functioning organization this calendar year. So our recommendation would be to accept membership in the Cultural Coast for this year. In addition, we have, I think, about 10 members of the Cultural Coast in our business community, several restaurants and other tourism-related organizations. And our membership in the Cultural Coast allows them to continue to be members as well. So I hope that wasn't too confusing. I was slightly confused about the whole thing when I was writing it, but just the way the budgeting works. But if anybody has any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
So at the end of the day, you're looking for approval for an extra $796 from another area of your budget? Or...
Yes, that would be the budgetary implication from the total amount that we had budgeted for regional organizations, and also council's approval that it's worth obviously continuing with the Cultural Coast for this year.
Deputy Mayor Aiken.
Thank you, Worship. Just to bring council up to, I'll report more fully on this at our next meeting, but at the Service Commission meeting this last month, the consultant that they hired to tell them how to set up the organization they want to set up came back, and their first recommendation was to put the whole thing on hold. So and now it's going to go back to whatever committee of the Service Commission generated in the first place to see how to deal with it. So they're, again, I'll report more fully, but it, the idea was they could, as Mr. Kelly Spurl said, piggyback on what Moncton's been doing, because Moncton's further down the road in this process. So they wonder if they could work something out there. But it was there's more to the report, but the principal point was they recommended be put on hold. As an aside, it led me to think maybe we should go after the money we gave them a few months ago, since it's not happening. So get a bit of a refund that might cover your cost.
So on that basis, you'll hear Deputy Mayor attended the Regional Service Commission on my behalf, and he'll give you more detail. But since that meeting, there has been a strategic committee meeting set for late in July to discuss that very topic over how to proceed, or if to proceed, and how to proceed on the regional front. Councillor Evans.
Yeah, so what we're choosing to do is to stay as a member with the Cultural Coast, because the RDMO would replace it in the best of all possible worlds, but it's not there yet, and they're talking about postponing it, so it makes a lot of sense to do that. I'm wondering, our membership is optional. Have other municipalities that were members dropped out? Because one of the problem with things where you can opt out, if you don't have a critical mass, it doesn't work. And so is the Cultural Coast still fully populated if we join? Like, you understand the gist of my question?
Thank you, Councillor Evans. My understanding is that everybody else is still on board. I think everybody, led by Shediak and I suppose us, because we're the ones who contribute the largest amount to the Cultural Coast, kind of went into the budgeting year with the idea that we would ideally split our money between the two organizations so that we would keep the Cultural Coast alive at least for this year. So I'm quite certain that everybody else is on board.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, a bit of clear the resolution that you'll be asked to look at. Okay. That takes us to the last item on additional motions. Is there any elements of that that anybody wishes to speak to? They're basically just regular business that we have on a repetitive basis. And... any questions you might have? Councillor Mitten.
Thank you, Your Worship. I do have some questions, and I didn't give staff a heads up, so I know they might not be prepared for this. So I'm wondering about the repeal of the bylaw for some clarification. Following the public hearing and listening to constituents, I'm wanting to ask a bit about repealing a bylaw without having a plan in place. and what might happen in that case, and the consequences of not having a heritage bylaw in place, and maybe review a little bit some of the planning aspects of what could be done instead.
Well, I think we'd be out of order, though, because we don't have it on the agenda. We didn't have it on the public agenda that we would discuss the other options.
Okay.
But we can, when the motion comes up, you can ask.
We can discuss it, or we can ask questions.
To ask
then.
For that
as
part of the response to the motion.
Okay.
So thanks for that. Any other areas on the anticipated motions? No? Okay, well, that takes us to the end of the agenda.
I move with
you. Moved by Councillor Tower, seconded by Councillor Finney. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you very much.